News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL. Good afternoon. I'm Steve Evans. Senator John Curtis is in the Uinta Basin today meeting with community leaders and his constituents. Senator Curtis has taken time out of his busy schedule to meet with us here on the radio and answer a few questions regarding subjects like progress being made in his first 100 days in office, environmental reform, public lands. We're going to talk about Uinta Basin winter ozone and possibly the expanded energy production on existing land leases. And, you know, as we're approaching the fire season, we'll ask him also, if time permits, about efforts being made as our senator to help mitigate wildfires here in the West. Senator Curtis would like to hear from you, and to that end, following our brief little conversation here, we're going to open up the phone lines where you can ask directly a question to Senator Curtis about an issue that you might be concerned about. So, Senator Curtis, the last time you and I spoke was when you were here right shortly after the election, and I believe it was in January. And since then, Senator Curtis, I have been really trying to keep up with you, and I've had a hard time. I don't know who's busier, Senator Curtis or Donald Trump. The only difference is I can kind of keep up with Donald Trump by watching Fox News at night, right?
Yeah.
I can't do that with you. But
well, listen, if you can keep up with Donald Trump, that's saying something. He is moving a million miles an hour, and then my job is to keep up with him.
And how are you doing with that?
Well, I'll tell you what, we are getting a lot done in Washington, D.C., and one of the first things President Trump asked of the Senate was to get his nominees approved, and I'm pleased to say we have approved more nominees than any president in the history of the company in the amount of time that we've had, and I think I said history of the company, in the history of the country.
Yeah,
sorry.
I do it a lot.
And the senators, Leader Thune, we are committed to get his team in place so he can keep moving quickly. And we're doing a great job. We've got some great people in there. We'll talk about in your program, people leading the EPA, people leading energy and things like that are really good people for this part of the state. People that you should be really pleased are out there serving for us in Washington.
One of the things I've been impressed with, Senator Curtis, is the synergy between the House and the Senate and the White House, at least on the Republican side. I'm just seeing a lot of support there. I mean, there's a few exceptions to that, obviously. But
well, we have a 3-seat majority in the Senate, and right. Depending upon the day, they have a 1, 2, or maybe 3-seat right. in the House, which means essentially everybody pretty much has to agree. You get a tiny little, like you can have one in the House not agree with you. But beyond that, imagine trying to get 218 people to agree on anything, no matter how politically aligned you are. And yet we have. And it's because the last November, the people spoke very loudly that they wanted some changes.
They wanted, and Congress listened.
And listened, right.
Which is amazing. I don't mean that as any disrespect to our respective congressional delegations here in Utah, because I think we have wonderful ones. But when you look at it by and large, you know, especially on the Democratic side, some of the crazy people that are representing constituents in different parts of the country, it's just mind-boggling that people would elect individuals.
So I haven't used this analogy for a while, but you've reminded me of it. Last November, you've got grandkids and kids, and when you go on vacation, sometimes you and your wife might have what we call a stop the car moment. A stop the car moment is when the kids are so bad.
I did that more when my kids were little.
Yeah, so those with young kids will appreciate this, right?
I've never done that with a grandchild.
Stop the car, right?
They can get away with anything they want to with grandkids, but anyway.
Yeah, but I had 6 kids, and we had these stop the car moments. Uh-huh. And when you stop the car, it's like, pull over. We're not going anywhere until we fix this. And right. I think that's what the country did last November. It was a stop the car moment. It was like, no, what's happening at the border is wrong. What's happening with inflation is wrong. Stop the car. And the American people, and not just conservatives, but the American people said, stop the car. We want to see some changes.
You brought up inflation.
Yep.
A lot of people here in the Uinta Basin are concerned about the tariffs. And I mean, we just came off a post-Biden inflationary crisis, really. I mean, we were in a crisis, especially for median income families, and now we're approaching the tariff problem, and it's bringing about some inflation, and we're uncomfortable. Many are uncomfortable with it. And what are your feelings about tariffs?
Well, first of all, I'm just going to say I don't like tariffs. That said, you don't want to outguess the president, and you don't want to outguess his strategy. And he's already starting to talk about trade deals with Japan and trade deals with Europe and trade deals with China, which we would not have had if he had not put these very high tariffs out there. Now, we don't know where this is going to end up, and we're all going to have to stay tuned and see. But it's very possible that we go down the road a little bit, and the president's willingness to take these tariffs up so high actually creates a bargaining chip for him where we're able to get better trade relationships with these partners. And the thing about the president is he does tend to see things a lot of us don't see. And he really saw how we were being taken advantage of by other countries.
Mm-hmm. And clearly.
And fixing that is painful, right? And we're experiencing that pain. And I'm telling you, I get calls from small businesses all day long. They tell me these tariffs are going to put them out of business. And those are hard phone calls to take. Right. But, you know, I'm looking, you and I talked about Ronald Reagan. I'm looking at a picture of Ronald Reagan here in your studio. You and I remember, we were talking about that when he was elected president, we had the Jimmy Carter inflation and stagflation at the time.
Right.
And when you and I were first shopping at homes, I'm guessing, you and I haven't talked about this, but when I was shopping at home with my young wife in the early 80s, mm-hmm. We were looking at loans.
9-10% interest.
And I actually had a bank CD that paid me 15%. And when Ronald Reagan came in, he inherited this inflation, and he made some moves that were heavily criticized. He actually forced interest rates up in order to get them eventually to come down. And for 2 years, he was heavily criticized for that. And then by the end of those 2 years, rates started to come down, and people saw the brilliance of his strategy. And it's easy to forget that.
Thank you for reminding me of that. I had forgotten all about that.
Yeah,
that he did inherit a horrible economy.
He did, and he took a lot of criticism incoming because of the way he handled it. But he was willing to make those hard decisions to get us to a better place. Now we'll see where this. This is the deal about the president. It's like the head coach that calls the call on 4th-and-1 to go for it, right? Like he's uh-huh. either a hero or a schmuck.
Right.
And President Trump is putting it all out there. You can't say he's not putting everything out there because he believes this is the way to deal with it. And last November, we elected a disruptor.
And we did, because the status quo
wasn't working.
We couldn't keep going on that. Could we keep adding to the national debt?
No.
I had a college student tell me, one time, she's a niece of mine. She said, I had a professor at University of Utah that told me that government debt isn't the same as personal debt. We can go into debt and it doesn't really matter. And I said, explain that to me.
Yeah.
She said, well, I don't know if I can explain it really good to you, really well to you. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, we saw
young people are thinking that.
Yeah. Well, we saw that with the Biden spending. I mean, it was out of control and it added hugely to inflation. And there's other factors too. But, what they called the Inflation Reduction Act was a huge stimulator for inflation. Right. And so now President Trump's coming in and it's painful and we're all questioning tariffs. And I'll be the first to say, look, I've pushed back on these. These are painful. But this is his strategy. And by the way, he campaigned on this. This isn't a surprise. He told us he was going to do tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to buckle up because it's going to be a little rough. And it is hard to see. It's hard to see. And like I say, these small businesses that are calling me, I've got a son that wants to build a home. He's been saving up. And now all of a sudden, all the prices and things that are coming in from other countries are just going to skyrocket. And
so you're telling him to get into a holding pattern now for a little bit?
So, I have to be careful because I told the same son a few years ago at the beginning of COVID. I said he was buying a home. I said, oh, son, you may not want to buy a home. And I'm so glad he didn't listen to me because prices took off in COVID. And so it's hard to outguess, the economy and what's going to happen. But it's a time to be cautious, I think that's fair to say, and just to make sure that if you're taking risks, that they're risks that you can manage.
Highlights in your first 100 days. What are some issues? I know there's been so many. I have a big stack of press releases that come from your press team. But what are the highlights of your first 100
days? I'll tell you
what.
First of all, I'm most proud of my team. Imagine just in 100 days putting together a full team. Just that alone is very, very difficult to do. Well, we were fortunate. We brought our team over from the House and then added some people to it, and it's an amazing team. We've co-sponsored dozens of pieces of legislation. We'll, I think on your list to talk about one for forest fires. That is one of the largest pieces of legislation ever introduced on forest management. And I was able to be fortunate enough to join with Tim Sheehan, the new senator from Montana, whose business is fighting fires, and then two Democrats to find consensus, which is hard to do when it comes to how we manage our forest. And we actually introduced that just last week. It's called Fix Our Forest. It's a really important piece of legislation.
On that subject, from 2023 to 2024, wildfires in Utah have doubled. And across the country, they've increased even more than that. How will this Fix Our Forest Act help us mitigate that problem?
Well, it streamlines a number of processes. And so if you look at the forest fires we have, particularly as they're getting closer and closer to an urban interface with homes, the ability to go in and, for instance, clean out the dead wood in those forests.
And California did not do that.
And
they had no water.
Right, yes. And they didn't store the proper amount of water either. There's lots of things that went wrong there. But I was down in Brian Head a few weeks ago, and you still see burned trees from that fire that was a number of years ago. Mm-hmm. And people down there will very clearly say it's because they didn't clear out the dead wood.
As you're driving out of here towards Salt Lake City, you're going to go through Current Creek and up
see
towards
the same
Strawberry.
Thing.
You're
right.
Going to see the same thing, yeah. Which was the Dollar Ridge fire.
Yeah. Oh, that was I remember that. I had been out in the basin during that. Took some pictures of it. But so it does a lot. And what's amazing, and this is the important thing about my work, is when your numbers are so closely aligned between Republicans and Democrats as they are now, almost everything we do requires 60 votes, which means I've got to go find 100% of the Republicans and 7 Democrats to get anything passed. And so you have to find a way to work with those that you disagree with. And if you work hard, probably not too different than a marriage, right?
That's one of the skills that I've admired most about you, is you've been able to reach across the aisle. And you're not just so rigid. You have a D by your name, therefore I'm not going to speak to you. You're actually conciliatory, and you're actually able to listen and hear what they're having to say and come to a general consensus that you can both agree on and get things done.
Well, let me tell you an important thing about that. Some people feel like that's compromise. And I would tell you, compromise in the traditional term is not good. And what I mean by that is, look, you give up half of what you want, I'll give up half of what I want, and we'll both plug our nose and vote for this bill. That's a bad bill.
Right.
But if you and I sit down and I say, look, what's important to you? Let me tell you what's important to me. And we can find some cross-sections there.
Like energy. We're producing the cleanest energy on the planet.
We can find some cross-sections there.
Yeah.
One of the most liberal persons in the House is Representative Jayapal. I would say that if she's right here. That's not derogatory. She leads the Progressive Caucus, so she would own that, right?
All right.
She and I found a bill on suicide to do together. And there's that cross-section, right?
Right.
And I find if you work long and hard enough, you can find these cross sections where I'm not asking you to give up your values, you're not asking me to give up my values, and this forest fire bill was a really good example of that. We worked really hard, and we sat down a number of times and said, well, I can agree to this, but I can't agree to that. And then they would say, well, I can agree to this, and you would keep getting closer and closer, right, until you've got something that you can go home and actually be proud of.
Senator Curtis, we're going to do something that has never been done in the history of this radio station. Now, KVEL signed on the air on January 17th, 1947. And since that time, we have had, I don't even know if they had a telephone line back then, but since that time, we've had just a single telephone line into the KVEL studios. So we're able to take multiple phone calls. We're going to do that today. This is the first time we've done it. As a matter of fact, it's the first time I've ever produced a live call-in program, so please bear with me if I happen to push the wrong buttons or what have you. The number that you are invited, if you have a question, if there's a subject that you'd like to ask the senator directly, that phone number is, get your pen out, 435-781-8255. That's 781-8255 or 781-TALK, 781-TALK. And if you want to call right now, we have a call screener standing by, and we can take your call. Senator Curtis, I wanted to to ask you about environmental reform. You have been working with environmental reform, and you're on the Environmental and Public Works Committee, is that right?
Correct.
You had a conversation with U.S. Secretary of Transportation Sean Duffy. You were talking about bureaucracy and regulations, and for example, I think $1 of federal money, if we take that, it will increase the project by 30%.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So tell us about that piece of legislation, what you're trying to accomplish with it. Yeah,
so first of all, I want to be really clear. It's a false narrative to say that you can't do projects quickly without damaging the environment. Those things are not mutually exclusive. And so nobody's talking about taking environmental shortcuts. We're just talking about getting stuff done. And whenever you involve the federal government, they add a whole layer on top of all the other regulations. So when the state does, let's just say a project like I-15 and they expand it, they have to meet every single regulatory requirement that is out there. But if you take a dollar of federal money, the federal government comes in and makes you do those things twice. And right? Yeah. So it's not like any more environmentally friendly, it's just duplicative. And it increases the cost of your project by 30%. And so that's silly money, right? I mean, and we're not talking about— It's wasteful. And we're not talking about environmental shortcuts. We're just talking about being smart. And out here in the basin, people know this. It can take years and years and years to get permitted for a project. And you know what I hear from people is like, I can take a no. Just tell me. Don't wait years and years and years to tell me that I can't do this project. And then, oh, by the way, once you tell me I can do it, I can be sued for the next dozen years. So who's going to invest right in a project like that? And it's one of the most difficult things to bring capital into an area like this, is it's so difficult to permit. So with my colleagues, and by the way, this is a bipartisan issue. And the reason it's bipartisan is it's as hard to permit a windmill as it is a pipeline.
So do you have 60% support?
Well, we don't have a bill in text yet. But okay. That's the whole thing, is what we're working on is what bill can we get that to that 60 threshold on? And I think we can do it because, like I say, they're realizing they can't permit the projects that they want to get done.
Okay.
And so there is some consensus. But I'll tell you, it's hard. But if it wasn't hard, somebody else would have done it, right? And so that just invigorates me and my team more to find that path forward where we can make it easier to get these things done. And by the way, this is right in line with the president's agenda and would be, in my mind, the single most important thing to bringing inflation down, because it's taking so long to build and do projects now. And if we can free that up, that's going to take a lot of pressure off the market, and that will help bring inflation down.
Okay. Again, I want to reach out to the listening audience and invite you to call in if you have a question. The phone number where we have a call screener standing by, his name's Colton. Be very kind to him. He's a very nice guy. His number is 435-781-8255. That's 781-8255 or 781-TALK. We're standing by to take your call. Senator Curtis, I wanted to kind of circling back a little bit on the Fix Our Forests Act. Western states like Utah, Idaho, and Wyoming are paying for the poorly managed public lands in California. Case in point, Rocky Mountain Power is I think they just passed a 35 or 40% rate hike in Wyoming. Idaho is facing a similar problem, and so is Utah. And we're managing our forests well here, but they're not being managed well because of the environmental bureaucracy.
Sure.
And regulatory bureaucracy that they're having forest fires that are costing PacifiCorp billions of dollars, and we're having to
gets passed on to ratepayers, yeah. And I'll tell you what else. This is where Utah does so many things well. Our state legislature has actually passed a bill that indemnifies PacifiCorp. So not if they are foolish, but as long as they do all of their due diligence and do everything they can to prevent those forest fires. Because what you don't want is a utility who is in the business of, we're not going to grow and expand because we're worried about forest fires. And Utah's managed that really well, not just our forest, but our legislation that makes it friendly, which is, I know there's pressure on rates here in Utah, but just, which is maybe one of the reasons you're not seeing those same rate increases that you're seeing in other states. And it is, it's frustrating when we do things so well here in Utah and everything from public lands to our state legislature, and then we have to bear the burden of states that are making poor decisions.
Senator Curtis, you're working with Senator Mark Kelly from Arizona on a bill to increase transparency in environmental reviews. I'm trying to find the bill's name, but tell us a little bit about that. And why is transparency in environmental reviews especially of interest to producers here in the Uinta Basin?
So also a good example, Senator Kelly's a Democrat. Mm-hmm. But he's from Arizona.
Yeah.
And we share a border.
And he hates Trump.
but it is an example, like when I say there's cross sections. So he's equally concerned about this transparency in environmental issues. Mm-hmm. And so imagine if you're applying for a permit out here and nobody can give you a good answer why you're not getting the permit. Imagine if you feel like you're being treated unfairly and you can't get access to that information. So he's joining me on this transparency bill that will make it easier and more transparent on what's happening in this process, so people will feel more confident in it and be willing to invest in projects.
Okay. All right. You are working with Senator Lee on introducing a public lands bill. I believe the bill is called Natural Asset Company Prohibition Act. I didn't even want to guess what the acronym on that is, but could you tell us what the Natural Asset Company Prohibition Act is?
Yeah, so this came up a couple years ago, and it sounded innocent enough when it came up, but as people started to look at it, they realized that these large corporations could come in and buy our public lands in Utah and then control what we did on those public lands, and they were called natural asset corporations. And so it stopped it administratively, but we want to stop it in the law so they can't resurrect it later on and do it. And as you well know, public lands are a big deal in our state. And making sure that a big corporation coming in from even out of the country or out of state coming in and buying up these lands through these natural asset companies or what this bill is targeted at to make sure that can't happen.
Are there many countries, China buying up public lands in the United States?
So the way this
would
work.
And how do they do that?
Yeah, so the way
this are they buying up private lands?
Yeah, so this would be, if you think about like a investment pool that people would invest in, and then that company would come in and buy up the public lands and hold them. But you could get somebody with a lot of money that would come in and influence that unduly to then tie up those public lands. So, for instance, you could graze or extract or do some of the other things that we want to do on public lands here.
Okay, so how do they get a hold of it? I'm not sure of that. How does a foreign entity?
So it's not the foreign entity. It's these natural asset companies that come in, almost like if you think of an endowment or something that would come in and invest in money. This vehicle would actually allow them to do it, and we're prohibiting to make sure that vehicle is not, that they cannot use that vehicle.
Okay, and that's happening.
Well, it was proposed to happen, and they stopped it administratively, but what Senator Lee and I are worried about is that unless there's a law against it, that they could bring it back and do it.
We're talking about ESG mandates?
Yes, it's all tied into that, yes.
Okay, I didn't realize that was a big problem until I read through with this. What about expanding production on existing land leases? This is energy production or other types of production energy.
Yeah, so what we find is it's not unusual to have a site where energy is being produced that is much larger than is needed for that site. Mm-hmm. It's already gone through all the environmental tests. It's gone through the NEPA test and all of those things like that to clear it. So why wouldn't it be okay to put another project on that existing piece of property without going through those reviews again? And that's what this bill would do. It would be simply say it could be anything from, let's say, at the power plant that's not far from here. They had a lot of extra land if they wanted to put in a geothermal project or a solar project.
Oh, I see. Okay. So they could utilize that.
Do that and not have to go through those reviews all over again.
So the bill is called the Co-location Energy Act. And it just makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense. Basically, you're co-locating different types of energy where energy's already been permitted to use that land for that type that it would allow another type of energy in that
space. So who would be against that other than the environmental obstructionists?
Exactly.
That's
yeah,
it, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, all right. Let's see. Callers, we would love to hear from you, the phone number. If you'd be our first phone call in, we'd love to have that. Love to hear from you. 435-781-8255. That's 781-TALK. 8255 is the phone number. We'd love to hear from you. Tell us about, on the bill to expand existing land leases for energy production, I noticed that you are working with Senator John Hickenlooper about that. Now, he is really anti-fossil fuels. Yeah. How did you do that?
So, by the way, he was the governor of Colorado when I was the mayor of Provo.
Okay.
And Provo introduced flights from Provo City to Denver. And we chartered the first flight out of there. It was a Frontier flight. We had the governor. We filled it with dignitaries, and we flew over to Denver, and he hosted us. And I got to know him from that experience. I think it's fair to say he's very liberal. I think, here again, I would say this if he was sitting next to me. He would own that. That's not a derogative term for him. And then Senator Padilla, a Democrat from California, is also on the – those two are the same ones as Fix Our Forest. And it's a good example to show you of this is relationship driven in the Senate. And when you have relationships with people like that, you can sit down and have a conversation about like, come on, Senator, let's be honest. We need to make some changes here. Okay, you're right. But this is bugging me. Okay, what's bugging you about it? And then they'll tell me, and it's okay, well, does this work for you if we do this? So he's looking at this and saying, wow, that means I can put a solar farm on an existing coal plant's footprint. Right. Well, okay, he likes that. Mm-hmm. And so this is targeted. And I think if you're honest, if you're looking at most existing, let's say, coal plants or things like that, it's probably not going to be another fossil fuel project on that same piece of property, but probably a project that he would be more receptive to.
Okay, we're going to jump into our very first call. We have, is that Lynette? Hi, Lynette. How are you?
Yes, fine.
Did I get your name right, Lynette?
Yes, you sure did. Thank you.
Okay, you're on the air with Senator John Curtis. Could you have a question for Senator Curtis?
Hang on, I got to put the headphones on, right?
Yeah.
Well, I do. I hope this isn't off subject too much, but I'm just wondering where the Uinta Basin Railroad stands.
Oh, it's a great question.
The last I heard, the Supreme Court was going to review that in January or so, and no one seems to know a thing what's going on with it.
Well, Lynette, thank you for being our first caller. I think you've just made history
have. Well, at least on our new phone system.
So 100 years from now, they're going to say, it was Lynette that made that first call.
Where are you calling from, Lynette? Where are you calling? Are you from Vernal, or where are you calling from?
From Roosevelt.
Okay. So, Lynette, we'll go ahead and let the senator answer the question. Thank you for calling.
So, Lynette, first of all, let's acknowledge it's a big deal that has gone to the Supreme Court, and a big shout out to your local leaders here who have not been willing to take no for an answer and have kept pushing that project all the way up to the Supreme Court. So you are right. The Supreme Court took it under consideration. I think it's been a couple of months ago. And I think literally it could be any day, including tomorrow, maybe a couple of weeks. We don't know exactly when the Supreme Court will come out with their decision. But those who understand the law will tell you, first of all, you don't know exactly what will happen, but they really like our chances. They feel like that we had a really good argument with the Supreme Court. So I'm optimistic, and I hopefully Lynette will see that just in a couple of days.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Thanks for calling, Lynette. All right. It was a great call.
Yep.
Should we talk about winter ozone?
Yeah, let's talk about winter ozone.
Winter ozone.
That wouldn't be a very hot topic in a lot of places, but it is in the basin.
No, but here it's kind of unique. And for those that don't, maybe understand that, the EPA exceedance levels keeps climbing higher and higher.
Tougher and tougher.
Tougher and tougher. With the intention, I would assume, the assumed intention of shutting down our oil and gas industry here in the Uinta Basin. Our environment is very unique here. Go ahead and explain why we have winter ozone Yeah. And usually ozone problems are created in California and Los Angeles area, big metropolitan areas that have a lot of methane going out into the atmosphere.
Yeah, this is a really good example of a government program gone awry. When you legislate one solution out of Washington, D.C., you're trying to put the basin in the same category as L.A., right? And there's just so many differences. For one thing, wouldn't it be nice to have an ocean next to you that blew out all your pollution, right, all the time? And the basin, and there's other parts, you know, the Salt Lake area is similar, has some unique geography and challenges. And two of those challenges for the basin are there's a lot of methane that just comes up from the ground naturally. Well, that's counted against you as if you were polluting.
It's called seepage.
Seepage. You've also got a high percentage of the pollutants in the air actually come from someplace else and come into the basin. It's not produced right here. But you're measured by the EPA as if you've produced all of that seepage and all of that pollution coming in from other areas. And that, in the combination with the fact that there is some produced here, those puts you out of what's called attainment. That's a serious thing. A lot of funding is tied into that. A lot of penalties are tied into that. And under the Biden administration, the local leaders and we had gone in and would made a case for some waivers for that because of these circumstances that I'm talking about. A good example is a forest fire. You can't control a forest fire and yet think of the pollution that puts in the air. And so the Biden administration not only wouldn't listen, but they were very punitive in their response. And this had been designated as out of attainment. Well, last November, we elected a disruptor, as we've talked about, right?
Right.
He picked Lee Zeldin and to be the administrator of the EPA. And if people don't know that name, they need to get to know that name. He's the one that ran for governor of New York as a Republican and almost won, and is the reason we actually have a majority in the House, because so many House Republicans won their seat because of his campaign in New York. And single-handedly is credited with giving us the majority in this last election cycle. Really bright guy. Well, President Trump picked him to be the administrator for the EPA. I had a chance to, because I vote for his nomination, he came to be interviewed by me, and we had a chance to talk about Utah. Well, guess what we talked about? We talked about the basin.
The basin. I'm one of those nerdy guys that watches C-SPAN in my spare time. And I'm scanning through the C-SPAN channels. There's two of them.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm watching the confirmation hearings of Lee Zeldin. And you're on that committee.
Yep.
And are bringing up the Uinta Basin.
Yes.
So I automatically perked up and turned up the volume.
Yeah. So for your listeners, I want you to know I'm fighting for you back there in D.C.
I'm a witness to that. Yeah.
And I got a commitment from him in his hearing that he would take a look at this. And sure enough, within days of him being put in, he changed the Biden administration's ruling that didn't give you the waivers and is giving you some waivers now so that you're not out of attainment. And he's done that because he knows how hard this area has worked to have clean air and to invest in better equipment so that your air is clean.
So that's being recognized.
That is being recognized, yes. And I think, you know, when I had my conversations with him, I said, look, trust me, the people in the basin want clean air, right? They don't want to wake up and breathe dirty air. They're very invested in it. They've invested a lot of money. The businesses out there have spent all sorts of money to improve their equipment, and they're making tremendous progress, but they have these geographic limitations, and we're just not really being fair with them. So he's making a huge difference for us, and he's a great advocate for reasonable bureaucracy and reasonable rules, and at the same time helping us attain clean air.
Are those waivers permanent?
No, and that's the thing that
we need legislation to do that.
Well, and we also there's a couple of things. Is there is a piece of legislation that I'm sponsoring right now that would say you can't. If a forest fire comes, you don't have to count that right into your numbers, right? And you actually use your numbers from
because
the previous before. Yeah. And so we are trying to pass some legislation to fix it. But at the same time, we always, and this just sounds like intuitive, right? We all need to do all we can to be improving our air quality. And particularly as the basin grows in population and people and more people come out here, more businesses, we welcome all of that. We want to see that happen. But it does bring more pollution. And so we've got to continually work on improving that and changing the legislation and be thankful for a friendly administration for the next 4 years.
So some of the science behind that, 80%, I think is quoted in a press release that you had, of methane that registers in the Uinta Basin does not come from traditional fossil fuel sources, but from ground sources, as you had mentioned earlier, that comes in, or air that comes into the region and gets trapped in the basin.
Yep.
In the wintertime, because cold air sinks, right? And hot air rises. We learned that in elementary school. And then when we have really high snowpack on the valley floor, and we have warm, sunny days or sunny days, it creates winter ozone.
Yes. So I explained all of that to Administrator Zeldin in our first meeting. He got a lecture on 101 geography in Utah. So it's intuitive, right? That you shouldn't be penalized for when you can't control 80% of the problem.
We're going to take a break right now. I have to clear some commercial inventory. There's some good people and merchants here that have paid for this time and have made it available to the public. So we're going to take a break here. I'm Steve Evans with News Talk KVEL, and we're visiting with Senator John Curtis, and phone lines are open right now. We have multiple lines. The phone number, if you have a question for Senator Curtis, this is your opportunity. It's 435-781-8255. That's 435-781-8255 or 781-TALK. That spells talk. Wasn't that ingenious of me to come up with that? Actually, so there we go. Call us, and we'd love to hear from you. We'll be back with Senator John Curtis right after these words right here on News Talk KVEL. News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL. Welcome back to our special program with Senator John Curtis. We have the phone lines are open right now, and we're going to go ahead and take a caller. Are you okay to take
a caller
right
ready.
Now?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go ahead and take a caller. Let's see, we have Laird.
Yes, correct. You've got Laird.
Hey, Laird, how are you?
Doing good, thanks. How are you doing today?
Thanks for calling. What question do you have, Laird?
So I just wanted to thank John for working across the aisle, working to actually get something done. I know I'm 59. I've been watching politics most of my life, and it's been so frustrating for over a decade now to see just the stalemate of not accomplishing things because they're not willing to do those compromises to figure out where the common ground is.
Well, yeah, Laird, sorry to interrupt you. Thank you for your compliment. I really appreciate that. You know, I will tell you, one of the things that I regret is that happens a whole lot more than you get to see, because as you can imagine, that doesn't make news the way that it makes news if we fight with our colleagues. And so, unfortunately, when we get along and we pass bills and work together, you don't hear about it back here as much as I wish you could. But there's actually quite a few of my colleagues that work hard and try to get things done back there.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. Thanks, John. Yeah, because like you say, the parts we see, and maybe it's because it doesn't sell well, but yeah, but it definitely, it's a critical part. And that's how our nation was founded, was by working together to try to figure out where they had common ground. And, because we all have ideas, and we have ideals, and sometimes I like to say compromise is a promise of things to come. We sometimes have to put off our ideas, and hopefully not our ideals, but at least some of our ideas to find common ground.
Yeah, Laird, and I'll tell you, I'm glad you brought that up. We wouldn't have a constitution if we didn't have a group of people who were willing to sit in a room and hammer it out and find that common ground, because they didn't go into that agreeing on how it should be done. And yet, thank goodness that they did, and found the right path forward that worked for everybody. They didn't all get everything they wanted, but we did get the Constitution, and it shows you how important that is.
Well, it really does, yeah. Because the story we're kind of told growing up is that they got together and wrote up a Constitution, but yeah, it was a hard fought.
It was, and they had a lot of very different opinions. Those were some Type A personalities.
Right? They were.
Yeah.
They were. And that is how it was accomplished, is by working back and forth, negotiating, finding common ground, and putting off some of their ideas. And tragically, one of the ideals they put off was slavery, which was a horrible thing.
It sure was, yeah.
Laird, I want to thank you for calling in. We appreciate you reaching out to Senator John Curtis. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks to both of you there.
Thanks, Laird.
Have a great day.
You too.
All right. If you have a phone, if you have a message, you'd like to reach out and talk, or if you'd like to make a statement, if you'd like to express your opinion, if you have a question for Senator John Curtis, this is an opportunity. It doesn't get any more intimate than this. 435-781-8255. That's 435-781-8255. If you have a question for Senator John Curtis, we have Colton standing by at the phones, ready to take your phone call. The Halt Fentanyl Act. Fentanyl accounts for nearly 50% of drug overdose deaths in Utah. That's an astounding number. Tell us about the Halt Fentanyl Act.
You know,
and I want to migrate into the border problems.
So, yeah, you can't talk without fentanyl without talking about the border. As a matter of fact, I have a visual in my mind. It's almost like a river flowing into our country of drugs, of fentanyl. And, you know, it's fair to say a vast majority of that comes from our southern border. But I'm learning more and more that this is also a northern border problem. And, of course, your listeners will probably remember one of President Trump's first thing was to put a tariff on Canada and Mexico. And then he backed off when they agreed to help with the fentanyl issue. And
have they followed through with that?
Well, I don't think you can say they are ever done, but they did increase what they were doing. One of the problems, particularly with Canada, is they've never done this before. They don't have the resources like we do in the United States to put on this. And yet, you know, as I say, I'm learning more and more that a lot of that fentanyl is actually coming from our northern border as well. And this is the problem that we have. And it's, you know, it's a blessing as a country to have the land that we do and the size that we do. But you can imagine the difficulty of trying to protect our whole entire border. And it's not just our land. There's our seaports and things where this is coming across. And, you know, if you trace all this back, you can be really tough on Mexico and you can be really tough on Canada. But where this really goes is China. And this is where we have serious problems.
Where the chemicals come from.
Where the chemicals come from. And I look, we've talked about a lot of things, but if we don't deal with China, we're not really putting our prosperity in a safe place, because they're threatening us in many, many ways, and they're undermining us in many ways. And this is just one example of a non-combatant threat to us, and where they're taking lives and livelihoods and people. And I think your listeners would be hard pressed to find anybody out there who didn't have somebody in their circle. You know, a nephew or a cousin or somebody who hasn't been impacted and perhaps lost their life over this. I don't know the number this year, but last year it was over 100,000 deaths in the United States, and it's just so sad. And what happens with this fentanyl, it's not just, you know, serious drug users. Sometimes people will go out and they'll lace other types of medication with fentanyl. And the fentanyl, you need just a tiny, it's so tiny how much it can take to actually kill somebody. And you hear about deaths all the time of somebody who bought, for instance, a prescription drug, then they tried to save money and didn't buy it through the proper channel, and it had fentanyl in it, and they lost their lives. There's lots of stories like that. And so we really need to do, this is kind of an all hands on deck issue for us, and it's at our borders, and it's with China. And it's a lot of areas where we just are not paying enough attention.
China, you have a special relationship with China. And I want to ask you about that in a minute. But I heard, you know, on one of the legacy media channels, they were actually anti-tariffs, and they were talking about us taking aggressive action against China, who is a friendly nation to the United States. And actually, we need to be partnering with them rather than creating a problem with them. What is your opinion of China? Are they a friend or foe?
So I always answer this question by first saying, this is not the Chinese people. We love the Chinese people. We love the Chinese culture. It's the Chinese leadership. It's the dictatorship
they have no control.
Who is as oppressive on their own people as they are on us. And so I think that's important, right, to designate that. No, I served a mission over in Taiwan. I speak Chinese. I love the Chinese people. I love the Chinese culture. But there's a warrant for my arrest in Hong Kong because I pushed back so hard on the Chinese Communist Party.
I guess you're not going here on a
I'm not going over to China on a vacation. But it's wrong, what's happening. And if you think back, you know, here again, going to our era, to the Richard Nixon era and Henry Kissinger, right. They thought that if we extended help to China, we could bring them closer to our values. And so we did, and we turned our head for decades to them stealing our intellectual property, and we turned our head to the slave labor over there, and we turned our head to a lot of the things that we wouldn't tolerate here in the United States, thinking that by embracing them, they would come closer to our values. They are further away from our values of freedom and democracy than they were when we started this experiment, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And they've taken advantage of, they've stole our intellectual property. They have slave labor, and there's just a lot of things that are wrong with this relationship. They work to undermine us all over the world, and you can go anywhere in the world and see China's influence trying to undermine the influence of the United States, and it's unhealthy. Now, all of that said, we don't have the option of a bad relationship with China. We are now too interdependent with them. So what I advocate for is not blowing up our relationship, but it's fixing the relationship. And part of fixing that relationship means we don't tolerate bad behavior anymore. You can't have a relationship if one partner has bad behavior. We need to demand appropriate behavior from China, and we need to hold them accountable. And that's what President Trump is doing. And here again, we've talked about this in the show. These tariffs are a painful way to do it, but it's one of the tools that he has to get accountability from them. And so we need to fix this relationship. We need to demand that they stop stealing our intellectual property. We, as consumers, need to be more careful about what we're buying over there, realizing that they don't have the same human rights standards. They don't have the same OSHA standards. They don't have the same environmental standards that we do. And yet we're asking U.S. businesses to compete when we put all of those restrictions on them, and with a country who can put things on our shelves without any of those restrictions.
Some of the problems that we have with China is we become dependent on them for our pharmaceutical chemicals, our weapons, our chips, our electronics, that really are supportive for military expansion. Are we dependent on them for those resources?
I want to say there's very few things that worry me in the middle of the night, and this is one of them. And it's not just China, it's Russia. So, for instance, we have about 20% of the power in the United States comes from nuclear power. We don't process, with a very, very rare exception, uranium in the United States. We send it to both Russia and China to process it and then send it back to us. So imagine if there was a conflict and they said, we're not sending any enriched uranium back to the United States, processed uranium back to the United States. It's 20% of our power, right?
Can we do it? We do it environmentally safe?
And yes, of course. And this is the thing, is like, if you're environmentally conscious, wouldn't you rather we do it here in the United States, where we control all of the standards, than in the Congo, where it's children doing the work and no environmental standards at all?
We should be self-reliant.
We should be, and we can do it better. And so if you want to protect the environment, do it here in the United States. And we've chased all of that overseas. And I think this, you know, going back to President Trump's first term, he also received a lot of criticism for his tariffs in his first term. But he's the one that really brought to the world's attention how we were being taken advantage of by China 8 years ago. And that started to turn not just U.S. opinion, but world opinion. And then COVID came on top of that. And that's what really started to bring people's attention to the fact that China had been a bad actor.
Call me a conspiracy theorist, but I don't believe in coincidences. And that just happened to come out of Wuhan, China, at the same time that they wanted to defeat Trump. I don't know.
Well, let me just tell you.
What are your thoughts on that?
Back when...
Am I a right wing?
Do we have another hour? Do we have another hour for COVID?
No, we don't.
I will just say that we really blew a lot of things during COVID, and we literally shamed people who dared question where this virus came from, and we literally shamed scientists who dared question some of the things that we were being told, and we've now since learned that we were guessing at a lot of things, and that's undermined a lot of trust in government institutions, and that's hard to win back. And part of that was that this didn't come from the lab. Well, Guess what? Now there's more and more evidence. And sadly, so much time has gone by that it gets more and more difficult to go back and piece together what actually did happen and hold China accountable for their role in this. And that's something I think that we'll always regret, that we didn't ask more questions at the time.
Do you have any idea, do you remember what the trade imbalance, I've heard it before, with China and the United States is?
I don't. So let's just say a lot to a little.
A lot.
let's get real technical here.
A real surprising figure. Circling back to the border crisis, the legacy media, in my opinion, again, is making coordinated efforts to exaggerate and to misinform what the intentions are with Homeland Security and with ICE and deporting bad actors that are here in the United States that are committing crimes, human trafficking, drugs, murder, mayhem, and. Are we compassionate in how we're handling this? And what are your feelings about illegals who have committed a crime? Should they be here?
So first of all, let me point out this is another false narrative, that we can't enforce the rule of law and be compassionate at the same time. Mm-hmm. We can. And I think we should really demand it. We should demand that people that are here and are committing serious crimes, they do not belong in our country, right? Now, yeah, do you have to use a little bit
more? I don't think anyone would argue with you, except for MSNBC.
Well, MSN. And this was one of the big, I think, issues last November when people said, stop the car. Yeah. They were seeing that there's just the open flow across the border, and you touched on things like fentanyl and things like that. And this isn't just Trump supporters. A lot of America said, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. We stop the car, right? Like, this, we need to fix this. And I think it's fair to say, and I felt this way too when we had so many firings coming out of Washington, D.C., there's always room for compassion and more compassion. And we do need to remember, right, these are people and lives, and we don't want to get it wrong when we're taking somebody out of the country. But I'll just double down and say we can have the rule of law and we can have compassion as well.
Okay, Senator John Curtis, we are in our final few minutes here. I want to kind of wrap this up with some final thoughts that you have, impressions of the future of the economy here in the Uinta Basin and your perception of our needs, and leave us with some parting thoughts.
Well, thanks. First of all, Steve, thanks. You're always such a gentleman, and I enjoy being part of your program. Thanks to your listeners for tuning in and being part of this. You know, you and I sat here almost 8 years ago when I won the seat to serve this area in the 3rd Congressional District. Mm-hmm. And I have just come to love and appreciate this area. It's been a real blessing in my life when they redistrict and put this in. The issues here are really important, and I've loved finding on actually a worldwide stage. And the message that I've taken to the world is what happens here in the basin is not a problem environmentally. It's actually part of the solution. And we do it better and cleaner here in the basin in the United States than in most places in the world. I also want your listeners to know that I don't take it lightly that they've given me their confidence and their vote to serve first in Congress and then in the Senate. And I go back to Washington, D.C., and like you happen to catch just by random me on C-SPAN fighting for the basin, I want them to know I fight for them. Their issues are my issues, and it's an honor to serve them.
All right. Thank you, Senator John Curtis. I almost called you Representative Curtis.
You can that or call me mayor, too. I like that as well.
How long has it been since you were mayor of Provo?
It was 8 years ago, sir, from 2010 to 2018.
8 years ago. And I want to commend your staff. You have an excellent staff, and there are people that have, many of them that have, as you mentioned earlier, that are carried over from your House days. And what do you think the future is with goals that you have, with bills that are coming up that have not been announced yet? Do you want to break any news?
I'll just say we were very pleased that we were just recognized as the 5th most successful legislator last year in the House of Representatives. And we're taking that into the Senate. And people come for different reasons. I came to get things done. And
thank you for sharing that. I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
we were super excited. It was a real honor for not just me, but for my team. 5th most effective legislator in the House last year. And bills that almost all were dealing with Utah-specific issues, problems that people had brought to us, and my team figured out a way to solve them. and just really pleased to have this opportunity.
I appreciate your PR team. They keep us informed, so it makes it easy for us to report on some of the things that you're working on for us here in the Uinta Basin. And we want to thank our listeners. This has been our first ever call-in radio program, so good experience for me and for the staff here. This is News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL. We've been on the air with Senator John Curtis. So thank you for joining us here on KVEL.